The following episode of The Big Film Buffet contains some coarse language. You have been warned.
I'm getting so, like, on my pedestal talking about American Pie.
Can you go off, King, for 5 minutes on American Pie and why you think it's so important? Because sometimes you say things and I'm like, okay, Lexi, like, whatever.
Hello, I'm Alexi Toliopoulos.
And I'm Jen Fricker.
Welcome to The Big Film Buffet,
a podcast for pop culture fans and people looking for what to watch recommendations.
And today, Jen, we're serving up our main course, where we're going to recommend to our listeners, or as I might like to call them, the diners at The Big Film Buffet, a Netflix what to watch reco that's coming out on the stream this weekend.
And the hottest dish we are serving at the buffet this weekend, the film that you should spend your time on, is Good Boys.
Look what I found at school today.
What is it?
I have no idea.
That's a tampon. Girls shove it up their buttholes to stop babies from coming out. An eighth grader told me that.
Good Boys is a film that I am very enthusiastic about. I was lucky enough to catch it in cinemas. So I'm very excited that more people are going to get the chance to jump in on this film. It is basically your classic teen gross-out sentimental comedy, but the kind of interesting and fun twist that makes this a brand new, fresh take is that we are no longer centered on adolescence nearing adulthood. We are centering on three very kind, sweet-hearted, tween-age boys.
Yeah, 12-year-old, 13-year-old boys who are experiencing puberty, are experiencing the death of innocence, that really weird stage in your life where you start realizing maybe your parents aren't perfect, maybe the friendships you have now aren't going to be forever. And it's such a heightened moment, I think, in everyone's life. What were you like as a teenager?
Oh, I was much like the good boys themselves. I was very sweet. I was very kind. I was very cherub-like. I was chunky, yet extraordinarily unfunky. I was a nerd.
Aw, bless you.
What was a teenage Jen Fricker like?
I was a big tomboy. I was very foot shy, so I didn't ever want people to see my feet. I'd go to the beach and I'd wear combat boots.
Oh, my Lord.
I would walk to the edge of the water in my boots and then I'd quickly take them off and run into the water.
Wow.
I had, like, ankle-length board shorts because I just did not want to be perceived. I was so shy.
Oh, my God. What are ankle-length board shorts like? I'm imagining, like, Junko jeans ready for the sea.
Pretty much. They were basically cargo pants but waterproof. And so heavy. It's wild that I didn't drown, frankly.
Can I just say a young Jen Fricker sounds like she dresses not unlike auteur director Kevin Smith?
Yes, 100%. I didn't have any of the, like, hockey jerseys or anything like that, but definitely, like, baggy, boyish kind of clothes like that. So for this film, watching Good Boys, I was like, oh, so relatable. Just trying to figure out who the hell you are at this extremely awkward moment in your life.
Yeah, it's so unique as well because I think we see so many of, like, those gross-out sentimental films that I really do think started with one of my all-time favorite groundbreaking films that we did mention a little bit on the last episode on The Snack, talking about that gross-out genre, American Pie. Comes out in 1999, a huge turning point in cinema for film that year, and this one is what changed comedy. I'm getting so, like, on my pedestal talking about American Pie.
Can you go off, King, for 5 minutes on American Pie and why you think it's so important? Because sometimes you say things and I'm like, okay, Lexi, like, whatever. And you have obviously incredible taste in movies, so it's not that I don't doubt it, I'm just not seeing it how you see it.
Okay, let me put the timeline into place.
Yeah, why was it so vital for 1999?
Well, I think 1999 is a turning point for cinema. We're seeing lots of big iconic movies, The Matrix, Fight Club, Spy Who Shagged Me, American Pie. But, you know, it's a turning point. Big filmmakers are getting a big chance. And I think that American Pie, where that sits in it, is that it's taking kind of like late 70s, early 80s gross out teen comedies like your Animal House, Bachelor Party, Porky's, and then it's kind of infusing them with the 1980s more sweeter, sentimental, John Hughesian comedies, and then gross out and sentimental come together for the first time, really, where it works out in like equal measure. And we're kind of seeing like that is, from that point, the evolution of where comedy goes. Because in the 2000s, you're getting stuff like Judd Apatow really popping off with like Knocked Up, with The 40-Year-Old Virgin, with Funny People, which is like that continued meld of those two different modes of comedy evolving. And I think like American Pie is like the cornerstone of all that. It's like the Rosetta Stone, if you will. And I think now Good Boys, I think, really is like that next step in like what this comedy is, because it's centered on a younger demographic, centered on teenage boys, which is very fresh, because all these like teen gross out movies and a lot of teen movies in general like centered around that idea of ascending into adulthood, the next step. But we don't see this next step very often, of like the step into adolescence. And I think with Good Boys, it's done so cleverly, because it has all that gross out stuff, it has all the sweet stuff, but like the balance is completely fresh, because these are naive people, these young boys played by Jacob Tremblay, played by Brady Noon, who plays Thor, and Keith L. Williams, who plays Lucas, who are these naive, sweet people that are in a world that is changing around them and becoming more adult. And it's played for such good laughs, this idea of them being like woke and talking about consent in like very like taut and adult ways is so fresh and so new. I don't think I've ever seen comedy done like this. I think Good Boys is perched, now that it's out there in the streaming world, to become a future sleepover classic.
Yeah. What were some of the sleepover classics other than American Pie for you? What were the ones that you were quoting the day after at school?
This is real niche. There was one movie called Kung Pao, Enter the Fist, which was this weird phony martial arts parody where they got old martial arts movie footage. It's directed by Steve Odekirk and stars Steve Odekirk, and they basically lip sync and like put new actors over the old characters, and it's a comedy film set in like old martial arts movies. I haven't seen it since I became 14, would have been the last time I saw it, but I was like, this is the sickest, funniest movie of all time.
You were saying before you're a good boy, but did you ever do anything bad? Did you ever be a bad boy?
I was so afraid of getting in trouble, like desperately afraid of it. And there was even one scene that kicks off this movie that reminded me so much of like exactly who I was. There's this great scene that kicks off the film where Jacob Tremblay, who is such a marvelous actor, like undoubtedly one of the best child actors of all time. And it's great to see him use his skills that brings like kind of like authenticity or fear to movies like Room or Dr. Sleep being used for comedy. It's pretty astounding. But this first scene is like where he's looking up kind of naughty things. He's making like a character on a World of Warcraft style game, an orc, then he's giving her a much bigger chest area, if you will.
Say it. Say the word. Say okay, boobies.
He's giving her boobies. He's making boobies quite large. I can relate to that so much, like just being a curious little boy playing video games. And then he like kind of tries to lock his door in a similar fashion. When I was a teenager, about 12 years old, my dad took me to his work, and he had like meetings all day. He works at a university, and he just like put me in his office, and he just said, you can use the computer, you can use the internet, don't look up anything weird, mate, okay? Don't look up anything weird. And as soon as he left, I typed into Google, Holly Valance, no clothes.
Oh my God.
As soon as he left the office, I'm like, just going like, yes, I've got access to a computer.
That's the second time we've mentioned Holly Valance on this pod as well.
Well, she's important to my mind.
Am I being naive? Like, do Good Boys actually exist?
Well, Jen, you're freaking staring at one right now, dude. Okay, I'm living proof that Good Boys exist. And yes, they do grow up, okay? And they grow up to be freaking movie fans. But, you know, this is, like, real, because, you know, you hear stories about, like, good boys going bad in stuff like Lord of the Flies. But, you know, Lord of the Flies is not really a real true story. It's, like, a fictitious example of, like, good boys going bad. But there is a real example of something like that in the 1950s. This little group of like teenagers from Tonga went out sailing, like they went on a little adventure, and they got marooned on like a deserted island, not unlike Lord of the Flies. And you think that would like turn into that kind of scenario, but instead they lived quite peacefully. They all were well fed for like the 2 years that they were lost there. They all remained quite happy, and they all like kind of worked together to live harmoniously and peacefully for that time. So I gotta say, not just me, but historical evidence leads us to believe that good boys can be out there. They can be true-hearted, even though they live in a very silly, grubby world.
As you were saying, we're so used to these like gross-out sentimental comedies that center around late adolescence. And it is something that I think is such a fresh take on this time in people's lives, is that kind of sexual awakening and just how shameful it feels. And I feel like that opening scene is so accurate in that. And then you just don't understand what's going on with your body or why you want to do things. And it's so ripe for comedy. It is wild that it hasn't really been explored. The other thing that...
There's something in there with you. Did you ever do stuff like that? Bring shame to your parents? Getting in trouble?
Yeah, I remember really distinctly being about 12, maybe 11, and I was at like a party with my family, and I called another kid a bullshit artist, which is such a weird thing to say as like a 12-year-old to be like, you're a bullshit artist.
Oh my God, that's so funny to imagine little Jen freaking going like, hey, don't bullshit a bullshitter, okay? I can smell bullshit a mile away, and you're a freaking bullshit artist.
I don't know why I call this kid that, but then they went off and cried, told on me to my parents. My parents dragged me up in front of everyone, and they're like, that's not okay. That's not okay. And I was like, clearly I've gotten this off you. What 12-year-old just knows the phrase bullshit artist? I don't think I've ever said bullshit artist since.
Of course, it's like an adult phrase, but it's an adult phrase from the 90s.
It is absolutely something an adult say about someone behind someone else's back, and I absolutely clocked it.
You would have heard your parents going, oh, tell that bullshit artist to rack off, please.
Yes, yes, exactly. Put down the landline phone. I'm tired of this bullshit artist. Let's go read the yellow pages and watch a VHS.
Shh.
I just kept on like getting drawn back into this movie, like with just like authentic, silly, stupid moments. There's one point in the film where to get money to be able to buy back a drone that they destroyed, they decide to sell a rare like magic card, like a card collectible game, and it awoke this forgotten, repressed memory in me. One of the happiest days of my life was going through like a deck of Pokemon cards that my dad had got me, and slowly but surely going through every card, seeing that I already had each one, and I was like getting disappointed by this gift that I'd gotten. And by the very end, I found a shiny holographic Charizard card, which is forever the best Pokemon card. It was the strongest Pokemon, and since then has become the most valuable Pokemon card. And one day, this little kid my age, his name was George, I'll say his name on the record, okay?
Yeah.
He stole my Charizard card.
Oh.
He stole it. You know, he had stuff going on in his life, I'm sure. I don't want to blame him too much for it, but it really hurt me. And he wasn't really my friend. Our grandparents were friends, so we were forced to hang out. And he stole my Charizard card. I looked up, as I was watching the movie, how much I could have made for it.
Yeah.
6K, dude. I could have sold it for 6K. That's such real money for me now.
That's, oh my God.
6K, dude. Georgie boy, what have you done to me, dude?
Oh my God. If I was you, I would think about that every single day and be trying to track this kid down.
George, if you're listening, I got one compound word for you. You're a bullshit artist, mate.
A thing that kind of distinguishes this, I think, as a movie of its times, is what you were saying before about how these kids are spouting this kind of really progressive language about sexuality, about bullying and stuff. There's this scene where the kids are practicing kissing on a CPR doll. And again, it's so cringy, but I've absolutely practiced kissing in the mirror when I was that age. Mm-hmm. And they're about to kiss the doll, and then one of the guys stops the other boys and is like, wait, 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 we've got to ask for her consent first. And I'm like, oh, that's just sweet. It's just something I've never seen mm-hmm. in a film before, or really anywhere before. I'm like, oh, that's nice. But it also just kind of shows you that dogmatic language that kids are given as tools, but they don't really understand how it applies in the real world.
And I think you really illustrated like the actual perfect comedic juxtaposition of this movie, because you called it a CPR doll like the kids do in the movie, but it is a real sex doll that one of the kids' parents owns. So it's like that perfect balance of like really sweet, tender, innocent behavior with like good intentions in a very grotty, grubby world.
Yeah.
I think it's done so well because it's both like simultaneously like fresh and new, because this is a language we've not heard used in a comedy like this. So it undercuts and updates like a lot of like what the history of this genre is in a very like exciting and fresh way.
Mm.
But also it's like this great like character comedy where we get like so much of like the perspective of what these characters are. It shows that they are very sweet, very thoughtful, kind, good boys, but they're starting to grapple with a world that cannot handle that. The world's not ready for what the new generation is going to be like. They're like nice people trapped in a grotty world.
Yes, absolutely. You get that feeling after you finish the movie as well. It finishes in a really beautiful place, and then it kind of hits you a bit emotionally because you're like, they still haven't grappled that like the world isn't as pure and ideologically clean as they've been brought up to be. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this bittersweetness at the end of this grotty movie that you're not expecting.
I know, right? And especially because so much of this movie is like focused on the friendship of these boys. Like, this is really all about like those first friends that you make in the world and how important they are for you, but do you stay friends forever? And I think that this movie handles it in a way that is very interesting, because it's still in that phase where like this is their future. Mm. And then it speeds everything up. It speeds all these relationships up. And I think that's like why this will be like a meaningful movie for people in the future, because those are things that we all went through. You know, you think that you're going to be friends with your friend when you're in primary school for the rest of your life, but are you really? I recently just caught up with my best friend from when I was that age.
Oh yeah.
After like a decade or so of not seeing each other, we had brekkie and we turned out quite similar.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, like, he's much smarter than me. He's like a very successful journalist and stuff, and I'm like a fake comedian. So it was cool to like catch up with him, and it kind of reminded me so much of this movie. And I want to say shout outs to Max if you're listening. Love you, buddy, and I will forever.
Oh, that's so sweet. I think that's the other thing about this movie. It's like such a nice metaphor that when you're at that age, the world feels so small. So you can have these really strong opinions like, these will be my best friends forever. My family are always going to love me. Mm-hmm. I'm always going to be in like this neighborhood and that kind of thing. And then as they kind of have to go on this quest, which is insane as we watch through the movie, and they get kind of exposed to all these dangers and surprises mm-hmm. in the wide world, it is like the perfect metaphor for what that moment in your life is like, where you start kind of seeing the edges of your world, or like the horizons getting a bit bigger, and you realize that you don't know as much as you thought, and you can't be sure about anything anymore. It's the same feeling I got when I watched Toy Story 4, which like I just cried for the whole thing. But I was watching it next to a 6-year-old.
And they don't get it.
Yeah, and the 6-year-old just stared at me the whole time being like, why are you crying? Like, everything's fine. Like, everything's worked out in this film. And I just was like bawling my eyes out. Like, obviously I didn't say it, but I was just like, nah, man, like, you never get your childhood back. And when you realize that, it's over and you'll never get it back.
Don't you get it, kid? I'm Woody.
And one day you'll be Woody too. Shh. I feel like I'm talking about this movie as if it is this like very sweet childhood movie, but it's like filthy. It's disgusting. There's sex toys everywhere. There's drugs. There's stupid physical comedy. It's so funny to watch because it's hectic that they're very young kids, and the swearing in this movie is off chops, I would say.
I don't know how they got these little kids to swear so much. It's like an accurate portrayal. Like, stuff like Goonies, I feel like, goes hand in hand with this movie, where they're on adventure, but they're these little rough little scrapper kids throwing language like this around. When I was 12, I'll admit it, I swore. I said stuff like piss, fart, and dookie, you know? I can relate.
He's a dookie.
I think that's like one of the things that makes this movie work so much is like the stakes are really high. Like high school movies and teen movies, the stakes are usually like unnaturally high, but they feel real because when you're in high school, everything is life or death. Everything is be all and end all. Mm-hmm. And I think for this movie to like extend them even further to be like, these are young kids that are in like a drug deal situation. One of my favorite scenes of the movie is when Lucas, the sweetest of the three boys, gets his arm dislocated.
Oh my God.
Then because they're too afraid to go to get help because they don't want to get in trouble, which is the highest stakes of everything, they have to try and like put his arm back into place with like the little bit of knowledge that they know from like using YouTube and stuff.
I mean, it is funny, like, because again, I just remember kids would do dumb stuff like that all the time. They'd fall off a building, break their arm and stuff. But also kids at that age are so resilient because they haven't had those like fearful experiences. So they can kind of just like dust themselves off and keep going, which again is like another part of the uniqueness of this movie, is that they can just kind of look these insane and absurd situations in the eye and be like, yeah, we'll keep going. We got to get to, you know, where we need to be.
Yeah, I got to say as well, this movie has like such a monster cast of like both young performers, like the three boys at the center. They are all superb. These are like some really high-end, top-tier comedy performances from them. And you've got such like older teens like Molly Gordon and Midori Francis, who play like these two older girls that are almost like the antagonists of the movie. But then you get a glimpse of like what their life is as well, and that's like another teen movie of itself. But then you've got like Retta, Lil Rel Howery, you've got Sam Richardson, you've got Will Forte, Stephen Merchant as well, like all turning in very silly, funny adult comedic performances, like peppering throughout the entire film.
There's the scene with Sam Richardson, who you might know from Veep, or he does an incredible Conan Goes Abroad special where he and Conan O'Brien go to Ghana. If you haven't seen it, I'm fairly certain you can watch it on Netflix as well. He's usually playing like a really likable, innocent character. So in this movie, he kind of plays a cop who's just like off duty and a bit over it. And it's great. Again, watching this movie as an adult, you can see yourself in both the adult characters being like, oh man, like life sucks. Not that, that sounds dark, I'm fine. You know, these characters who are like tired, they're burnt out, they've been working and stuff like that. And then you can see yourself in the characters of these kids who are just like innocent, wide-eyed, surprised by everything. It's so great. But yeah, I love Sam Richardson so much. When he popped up in this, it was so good. Will Forte playing a dad.
Oh, he was born for it. The guy was born to be a dad in a teen movie.
Yeah, and he always plays absolute kooks. So for him to play kind of a straight man is amazing.
But even his straight man is like completely kooky. Like when he's having an argument with his son, he's like, I love you, but I don't like you right now. Like saying like such crazy lies, like you will no longer refer to me as dad and stuff. And just like being totally like weirdo nerdy. I just really think this is such a cool movie. And it comes from a Dunder Mifflin alumni. Gene Stupinski was a writer behind The Office, An American Workplace. So I think if you like that kind of humor, you're really going to get a lot out of this like very strong comedic debut.
Similar thing, why I love The American Office is there is so much heart. It is stupid and ridiculous. And it's oftentimes people taking really big swings at things and embarrassing themselves. It's very human about that. And that's in the genealogy of this movie as well. It's about people just trying to do the best they can, taking massive swings, things not working out, and quite often turning disgusting.
If people have already caught up with Good Boys, Jen, what are the movies in that same vein that you think they'll also like?
Oh, well, one that immediately comes to mind is Booksmart. Came out a couple of years ago.
Absolutely love it.
Olivia Wilde's directorial debut. And it's got a kind of similar thing. Coming of age, kids who aren't very cool but trying to do cool things. There's a lot of heart in it.
I love this movie as well. And I would say I scarily look exactly like Beanie Feldstein. Someone put a blonde wig on me with long hair, and I looked exactly like her. I even have the same teeth as her.
What? Oh, my God.
Yeah, you can check it out. I put it up on my Instagram.
Yeah, I'll have a look. Oh, my God.
And the other one?
The other one is Wet Hot American Summer. There's a TV series on Netflix. And like Good Boys, has really young people doing really gross things.
And often played by like 40-year-old men.
Wet Hot American Summer has teenagers played by people in their late 40s. It's very silly. It doesn't really exist in any kind of real universe, but it's just really good fun. And if you enjoyed Good Boys, you'll definitely enjoy that.
Two perfect recommendations, two of my favorite things ever. I'm also going to chuck in, also on Netflix, Big Daddy, the Adam Sandler classic. I think it hits those same sweet spots while still being very silly and irreverent. And I caught up with it not that long ago, and it brought me to tears. I love it. I love you, Sandman. So Good Boys is our big recommendation to you this weekend. We're both extremely enthusiastic about it. It is on Netflix right now. So I suggest chucking it on. Or if you're a cool uncle or something, spread the word to your little nibblings.
Oh, my God.
Let them know about it.
Alexi's your funcle. I'm your staunch aunt. Your staunt.
Your staunt and your funcle recommend this regardless. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Big Film Buffet. If you like this podcast, give it a review on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a nice comment and don't forget to subscribe or follow.
This episode was hosted by Alexi Toliopoulos and me, Jen Fricker.
Produced by Michael Sun and Anu Hasbolt.
Edited by Jeffrey O'Connor.
And executive produced by Tony Broderick and Melanie Marnie.